Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. There were a couple stories regarding extraordinary acts of forgiveness in the news recently, which got us thinking about the place forgiveness has in healing, in extreme circumstance, and in everyday life. One of those stories involves Dylann Roof, found guilty of murdering 9 African Americans during a Bible study at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston in 2015. The death penalty phase of his trial is underway, but it's worth going back a year and a half to Roof's bond hearing, during which Nadine Collier, daughter of murder victim Ethel Lance, said to Roof, "I forgive you." She went on to say, "You hurt me. You hurt a lot of people. If God forgives you, I forgive you." It was a remarkable act of pardon. Why do we forgive? Does it bring healing to the person who was wronged, to the person who did wrong? And are there benefits to walking away without forgiving a wrongdoer? We'll be talking about this and much more this hour. And we'd like to hear what you think. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. Or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet to WHYY Radio Times. Lisa Christian joins us in studio, a therapist and licensed social worker. She's director of community services at the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia, and she provides counseling and therapy to family members of murder victims. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Michelle Karlstrom is a licensed mental health professional and a certified grief recovery specialist. She heads the Employee Work-Life Program and the Faculty and Staff Assistance Program at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Hello, Michelle.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Lisa, first to you. You counsel those who lost loved ones to murder. Where does forgiveness fit into the conversation with people who've experienced a heartbreaking and disturbing loss?
Well, I think forgiveness is a very individual process. It's a process that people go through when they are compelled to feel a sense of, to fulfill a sense of need in their lives to be able to move forward. Because for a lot of people, particularly victims or co-victims of homicide, they can sometimes get very stuck in the anger, in the resentment, in all of the other emotions that tend to trap people and tend to make them stuck. So for a lot of people, they have found that being able to forgive doesn't mean that they're necessarily providing an out for the perpetrator. They are willing to look past their inability to change what has happened in an effort to move forward in their lives and to be able to experience other emotions like joy, like happiness, peace. And that is what many survivors of homicide are looking for. So it's an effort for them to be able to move forward. Mm-hmm. It's not for the perpetrator.
What do you think of extraordinary expressions of forgiveness such as that from Nadine Collier, not, I think, 48 hours after her mother was murdered, toward Dylann Roof? Are they as uncommon as we might think?
No, I don't think it's uncommon at all. I think when we look back historically, we have seen other people who very early on, after there's been a traumatic event, after there's been a really catastrophic experience, will say, you know, I have to forgive in order for me to move on. It is very much for the person who's suffering the loss.
So, Michelle Karlstrom, as we heard Lisa just say, you know, forgiveness can help victims move through anger and move forward. What else can forgiveness do for us?
Sure. I think just to echo what Lisa is saying also is I think we have this notion that forgiveness comes with the request or an apology. And exactly what Lisa is saying is that we don't need to be asked to forgive someone. It can come from us to the other person without that request. And that's a really freeing way to think about forgiveness insofar as it's really for the forgiver, and it helps to lighten that emotional burden. So we know that forgiveness is, research is coming out more and more around how it is helping people release the physical and emotional burden that's connected with hurt and disappointment and loss. A lot of times in grief recovery, we think about grief as connected with death, but we're all grievers. We all are grieving losses every day throughout our lives. So if you think about grieving connected to loss, there's so much value in learning to forgive and practicing forgiveness to let go of that physical and emotional burden to help us feel lighter, let go of the stress that's associated with carrying injustices, and to move forward in a healthier way.
I've read that a year and a half later, Nadine Collier is still grieving the loss of her mother. So forgiveness can help, but it doesn't erase
that's
grief,
correct.
Lisa. Yeah.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
That's right. I would say also the emotional recovery from a traumatic event and justice are completely separate tracks. Now, sometimes they collide in terms of really wanting to see that justice and thinking that you'll get a booster shot in your emotional recovery, but they're separate tracks that people can work on. While the justice process is or isn't underway, you can pursue your own emotional recovery. And practicing forgiveness and learning to forgive is part of that process.
We've got calls. Go ahead.
Oh, and keep in mind, too, that forgiveness is a process. And it is idiosyncratic to each person. And through that process, it may change. It may look differently as people progress through their life stages. It is very different for everyone.
We're going to get to some guidelines regarding forgiveness in a moment. But I wanted to get to a comment from Richard, and we do have calls and comments coming in already. He says, I hope you also discuss the equally appropriate option of being comfortable with not forgiving someone for actions. Forgiveness might be good for health, but it's not always the appropriate decision to take. Case in point, when my sister was dying, that part of the screen. Oh, there we go. It's back. When my sister was dying, Richard says, she decided not to see a former friend with whom she'd had a falling out and was comfortable in that decision. So, Michelle, as somebody who works with a grief recovery counseling, is it always necessary to forgive?
Yeah, I think it's an individual choice. And I think if you are in your last days and in your final days, there's a process that you're going through in terms of reconciling the things that you feel compelled to reconcile. And I agree with Richard. There are places in life where if it's not for you and if you're not able to pursue forgiveness because that feels comfortable or that's a safe place of not wanting to open that emotional area of your life, then that's an individual choice. Now, research tells us that a well-functioning person, if they can forgive, we're starting to connect it to being able to function better. And for a person who might be carrying post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, if they can practice forgiveness, it does lighten the burden in that area. But I don't think that for practices of forgiveness and other strategies of this nature, that it's a one-size-fits-all.
Lisa Christian, I'm guessing that in your field of work, in which you work with family members of murder victims, quite often you encounter people who simply can't forgive. Understandable?
Right. It's definitely understandable. And not only is it understandable, we have to leave room for people to be able, as they heal, as they go through their process, in time, they may or may not seek forgiveness of that person or those people that injured them so deeply. So it is very much a process. And, you know, whether or not you choose to forgive today doesn't mean the door is shut for the future, because our work is very much about getting people to look at what their future is going to look like. You know, you've learned to live with that loved one for so long, and in some instances for many, many years. Learning to live without them is a process.
Yeah. This is from Johns Hopkins, and Michelle, you touched on this just a little bit, but unresolved conflict can lead to issues with physical health. You touched on post-traumatic stress. What else? The act of forgiveness can do what to help a person's health?
Sure. Unresolved conflict can, depending on the nature of the conflict and the duration and what the event actually was, can keep us in a state of increased stress, which puts us in that fight or flight mode. So if you're chronically angry or chronically frustrated, and you're in fight or flight mode, the way that it impacts your health is it can increase your heart rate, your blood pressure, your immune response system, and that also puts you at risk, especially if you're predisposed to depression or heart disease. It puts you at risk for the increase of those things. So on the other hand, working toward forgiveness, and I would just add, seeing the incident in a bigger context than what we initially see it in, or the person who wronged you, seeing their life in a larger perspective of your relationship with them is larger than that incident, is a helpful way to start to let go, calm your own stress level, and improve your health.
You know, easier said than done, though, I guess.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So that's when you seek professional help, perhaps. Lisa,
well,
question.
For some people, I think that is very true, but I think that when we talk about forgiveness, again, we have to leave the door open for people who are just simply not there. And it is okay. It's important for us to let people know that if that's not where they are at that point in time, it is okay. Because it doesn't mean they can't get there. It doesn't mean that there's no hope that things will change or be different for them as they go through their process. And I agree with the gentleman whose email that you read about his sister not being able to be in a place to forgive. You know, when you think about people at the end of their lifespan, where and how they spend and expend their energy is very precious. You know, if she wasn't ready to tackle that, then that's okay.
Well, and I imagine can only add extra stress if you think you need to. Okay. I'm going to read, going into the break, an email from Regina, and then we can comment afterwards. She says, as a homicide survivor, my sister was murdered 25 years ago on Christmas. I was not able to forgive for many years. It wreaked havoc on my life and my children. Anger, depression, anxiety, substance abuse, etc. After many years of trying to forgive and not being able to, it was my pastor that said these words that changed my life. Forgiveness is a decision. It's not a feeling. So actually, we have about 15 seconds. It's a decision, not a feeling. Lisa?
It's definitely a choice. It is an active, conscious choice that people make in order for them to be able to move forward.
All right, we'll pick up on that some more after the break. Lisa Christian is a therapist and licensed social worker and director of community services at the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia. Michelle Carlstrom is a certified grief recovery specialist. We're talking about forgiveness this hour of Radio Times, and we hope you'll stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are talking about how and why humans forgive, the struggles we face in doing so, and whether forgiveness is beneficial for our health. We're taking calls at 888-477-9499. Lots of comments coming in. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Send an email to radiotimes@whyy.org. Michelle Carlstrom is a licensed mental health professional and certified grief recovery specialist. She is with us this hour, along with Lisa Christian, who is director of community services at the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia. Lisa provides counseling and therapy to family members of murder victims and to witnesses of murders. And we were talking about forgiveness being a choice going into the break. We have a tweet from Carla who says, I believe it's essential to forgive in order to be free of hatred and anger. It is a difficult daily decision. It's a difficult then daily choice, Lisa. Forgiveness is just not, it's not just one and done. Can
exactly.
You tell us about that process?
Yeah, and again, that looks different for everyone. And people's reasons for forgiving or wanting to forgive. And one, people have to have awareness that forgiveness has a place in their lives. and it has a place in how they value their future and what that's going to look like moving forward. So I think the first step is awareness, to have awareness that, one, forgiveness can be useful to them, because if it wasn't useful, why bother? You know, and when you talk about people and mental health issues, we have to take under consideration, too, where people are at emotionally prior to their decision to forgive. And I think that's really, really crucial.
Michelle?
Sure. I think forgiveness absolutely is a conscious decision to let go of the negative feelings associated with the wrongdoing. And that comes in time. And I think there is a process for that. In fact, the American Psychological Association has a book out called Forgiveness is a Choice. And it is this unpacking it from as much as possible from the event or from the actual request of I'm sorry, will you forgive me? And it starts in the person who wants to give forgiveness to let go of the negative feelings. I would also say that if you really dive into the research and forgiveness, they have two buckets, as it were, a decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness. And they look at decisional forgiveness is just that person who is deciding for my own health and well-being, for my own daily functioning, I'm going to decide to, as best I can, let go of these negative feelings. Emotional forgiveness is when you really start to feel that empathy and feel the lightheartedness that comes along with truly letting go and truly emotionally releasing all of the hurt that you're carrying from that.
So Michelle,
two different kinds of forgiveness.
Well, how do you, and you brought up empathy a little bit earlier in the show, how do you empathize with somebody who's done something terrible, perhaps, to say, a member of your family? How do you build empathy around that person?
I think it starts with you. So there is a training process, and there is a way to learn to forgive. And I think if we were to just try to give some bullet points to the listeners, one, admit that this is terrible and you've been wronged or the person has been wronged and it's horrible, and have all of the difficult emotions that go with that come out and have them, and we live with them. So society tells us, oh, we have to get over these negative, hard emotions as quickly as we can and get back to normal. But when you have an incident like you're talking about, Mary, it's nearly impossible to just get back to normal. So your new normal is living with all of these difficult emotions. So that's the first step, is to recognize how this has truly impacted your life for the foreseeable future. The next step is to then look at it as much as possible, and oftentimes this can take either a professional group or a professional relationship with someone who's trained in this, but start to see the offense in a bigger context, or start to see the offender as, if possible, more than just the offense. So if something has happened to your family and you're starting to reflect on all the things that you're carrying because of it, then you start to begin slowly to think about the other person's family, and the larger context there. Recognize that the pain is never going to totally dissipate, and that this is a new way for you to move forward, and this is part of your new normal and who you are. And then the last step, which sounds difficult, but I've seen people do it over and over, is to find meaning in your suffering, perhaps by helping other people understand it or teaching other people this practice, but to look for some sort of meaning in this occurrence, in the pain and the suffering for yourself. It doesn't have to be necessarily proven meaning, but what is it that you've learned and can take forward with it?
Lisa, in your practice, in working with the families of murder victims, do you find that this happens on occasion or more than occasionally, that people come around to actually feeling, A, empathy for the person who killed a family member, and B, they're able to put their suffering to work, find meaning in the suffering?
I think that, again, for me, it's been with each individual family, it's always going to be different. I don't find a lot of family members who initially come in and say, look, I really empathize with the person who killed my loved one. I just don't see that in my practice. But what I do see is people being able to tap in to their level of resilience and to be able to really begin to understand what this trauma is, how it's occurred, how it's impacted them, and what it's going to mean for them each and every day, and how they're going to adjust, like the young lady said, to a new normal. What is their new normal moving forward? And for some people, it takes a very long time. They are much further along in their process, and that's when they begin to talk about forgiveness and being able to move forward. Right. But that I don't see that initially.
We've got an email from Adam who says, what does forgiveness mean? I was mugged and beaten, and while in time I stopped thinking about this and I'm not stressed by this memory, I see no need to forgive them. To me, that would mean that if I met them, I would treat them like any other people. I don't feel that way, nor do I want to. I have moved forward without forgiveness. I mean, if you even consider forgiveness, do you necessarily need to talk to the person who wronged you to forgive, Lisa?
Definitely not. Definitely not. And again, forgiveness is not about seeking permission from the wrongdoer to be able to move forward. It's about taking a stand and being able to say, look, I'm going to do this for myself. Because oftentimes we don't get an opportunity to face the wrongdoer. We don't get an opportunity to say, look, this is how your actions have impacted my life and that of my loved ones.
We're also talking about, obviously extraordinary acts of forgiveness, but also forgiveness in everyday life. I mean, it can seem really tough to forgive something much smaller, say a perceived slight or, something mm-hmm. that's carelessly spoken. Why is this seemingly so hard? Michelle Carlstrom?
Thanks for bringing that up, because I think it is very different, forgiveness in daily life versus forgiveness around a traumatic event, mm-hmm. which is so much harder. And the value in forgiving for a traumatic event is for you. The value in forgiving in the course of the normal life is for you and for the relationship. Often, we have a relationship in the course of normal life where we've been offended or hurt or disappointed. Maybe it's an affair. Often we're invested in that relationship or the other person. And in order for that relationship to recover, in order for us to feel that it's not a reflection of our own self-worth, it is important to forgive. I think often in those circumstances, it might be easier to begin slowly to think about empathy and to think about how to forgive the other person, even if they're not asking for it, and move ahead.
Yeah, even in small situations that might mount up during the day or in the course of a relationship, I just brought to mind something that I read that we can attribute to Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She said, sometimes in a marriage, it helps to be a little deaf.
We say in grief recovery, would you rather be right or happy?
Yeah.
So very similar. Right or happy is a quick way to calibrate on a daily basis in terms of, do I want to roll up my sleeves and dig into this conflict or this challenge, or would I rather just be happy?
Yeah. All right. We've got a comment from Bill who says, I've been in recovery for over 25 years from alcoholism. And one of the sayings that floats around the 12-step community is, we shouldn't let someone live in our head rent-free. Forgive them for you first, and them second. What do you think about that, Lisa?
Well, again, I mean, I think there's a place in that, because very often in the families that we see, substance abuse is a huge issue. Not just substance abuse, but sometimes long-term addictions has been a huge issue. And people seeking relief through substances. But I think with respect to forgiveness, again, I don't think that it's necessary to get permission or give permission to the offender, because our agency, again, we service a lot of families of murder victims, but we also service victims of violence and violent crime as well. And even with sexual abuse, with domestic violence issues, we see these issues come into play over and over again. how are you going to move forward? And for some people, the path is through forgiveness. For others, it's okay to be able to move forward without forgiving.
Can forgiveness actually increase the chance that someone who offends will repeat the offense?
I think
you know, perhaps if they haven't fully accepted the pardon, or they think, you know, there's somebody who, you know, was tempted to repeat, well, I've gotten off the hook.
I think that may be true for some people, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's true for all people. I think that if someone's going to do something that's wrong or egregious, I think they're going to do it regardless. Yeah. For some people, yeah, it might be a population out there who something they've gotten away with something, and it gives them more license to keep on to keep at the behavior, yeah. because they haven't been stopped. But I don't think that's true for everyone.
So, Michelle, don't necessarily use that point to not work toward forgiveness if you want to forgive.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think in terms of the offender, it can't be about the offender. It has to be more around the individual who needs to forgive. Some of us are inclined to go through our lives and collect injustices, and we let that collection of injustices and offenses toward us define how we see the world and how we see the people in the world that we relate to. And that kind of behavior it produces grudges, and it can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and those people who are looking for injustices, sometimes we say a hammer looking for nails, they're more likely to have health impact, negative health impact.
Let's go to the phones. James in Philadelphia is standing by. Welcome to Radio Times, James.
Yes. I wanted to ask your guests, just how do you achieve forgiving someone? It's not that easy just to say that, you know, you forgive someone, but truly in your heart, how do you release that?
Good question, James. Actually, Michelle, this again from Johns Hopkins, forgiving deeply. This goes beyond simply saying, I forgive you. How do you really forgive someone? What does forgiving deeply mean?
Right. I think, James, you have to be ready for it. And sometimes it's a long process, years working up to that true emotional forgiveness. So there's decisional forgiveness. Sometimes that can precede emotional forgiveness. But the emotional forgiveness often comes from looking at the pain that not forgiving has caused. And there's a process for that. And part of that involves having lived in pain and grudges and often having a negative health impact, either physical or emotional health impact because of it. But it starts internally by looking at what it's costing you to not forgive.
So the first step is taking a look at the impact on you of the offense.
Right, exactly.
Lisa?
Yeah, I think, too, I think that that's exactly right. I think it's a conscious decision you make on a daily basis that you're not going to be held hostage, you're not going to be burdened and bogged down by all of the negativity that they've experienced to that point, and just being willing to work on it day by day. It's a process.
Yeah. James, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Just like to get through a number of comments as they come in here. We have a tweet from Jay who says, the best lesson I learned in rehab, forgiveness done right, starting with yourself. Tweet from Colin, big part of it for victims, I would think, is forgiveness can mean empowerment and taking control back after an act they had no control over negatively impacted their lives. And also a tweet from Nina, I forgive you not because you deserve forgiveness. I forgive you because I deserve peace. I'd like to go back to the tweet from Jay just for a moment. Forgiveness, starting with self. Do we have to forgive ourselves as well, Lisa, Christian, before
definitely.
We forgive somebody else? How so?
Definitely. I think for some people, depending on how long they've held on and how long they've been in captivity by those negative emotions. Sometimes for some people, giving themselves permission to say, look, I've been stuck here for so long, or I felt this way for so long, I need to move forward. Sometimes it's okay for clients to say, look, I'm sorry I stayed in this for so long. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to tap into that resilience and that inner strength that I have to be able to move forward. I stayed stuck a long time, but now I'm deciding to do something different.
It almost seems like you're adding to the victim's stress, Michelle, if we feel we have to forgive ourselves. But as Lisa was saying, it's worth moving forward if we practice this.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading some research and it says extroverts are more interested in the dyadic forgiveness between the offender and the oneself, whereas introverts are more often can be more inclined to look at self-forgiveness and their relationship with the burden that they're carrying. So I think that's just an interesting little piece to it. But with traumatic offenses, of course, giving yourself permission to move forward with maybe some of the less traumatic reasons that we find ourselves needing to forgive, I think we can get tripped up in meshing ourselves in the other person's decisions, in that something we did caused them or something we didn't do caused them to do the act of wrongdoing. And I think unpacking that and forgiving ourselves, pulling back from their actions were their actions. And while we all are relating together as human beings in this world, their actions and their decisions were theirs, and ours are ours. And that's where the freedom comes in terms of being able to think about the impact that it has on us as individuals and then letting go.
All right, we're focusing on forgiveness this hour. Michelle Carlstrom is a certified grief recovery specialist. Lisa Christian with the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia. If you'd like to give us a call, 888-477-9499. More just ahead. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Lisa Christian is with us in studio. She is a therapist and licensed social worker and director of community services at the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia. Michelle Carlstrom is a licensed mental health professional and a certified grief recovery specialist. Again, forgiveness, the focus. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499 is the number to call. And Elisa, during the break, we were talking about forgiveness and also including the person who is deceased.
Yes.
In the conversation. How so?
Because oftentimes the survivors have a lot of unfinished business with the deceased. And sometimes those relationships were not always what they could have been. There's oftentimes a tremendous amount of guilt, a tremendous amount of baggage that is left, things that have been left unsaid, left undone. And oftentimes people need a little bit of help to be able to process those kinds of issues, particularly if the person who's deceased wronged them in some way, or there were grudges, or there were outstanding family issues, relationship issues. And sometimes we have to do some work with the survivors to be able to forgive the person who's deceased. And I just wanted to raise that because it's complex. And these are some of the things that we experience at our agency.
All right. Thanks for that. Back to the phones we go. Jessica in Plymouth Meeting, you are live on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Going back to self-forgiveness and forgiving oneself, we were just talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you truly forgive yourself when you have wronged people when they may not have forgiven you already and you're trying to cope with that process?
Interesting question. Michelle Carlson?
How do you forgive yourself when they haven't forgiven you? Is that the question?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. If you hurt someone and they're still grieving through that process and you're trying to have them forgive you as well as you forgive yourself in the process.
Right. I think so. So again, I think the person who's committed the offense, I would go back to saying emotional recovery is different for each person. And so the person who committed the offense needs to work on self-forgiveness as well as repairing the relationship if that's desired. And then the person who's working toward forgiveness, he or she might get there at a very different time, if ever, than the person who committed the offense. And I think the process is really not that different. It just happens in different on a different time scale and then the other. I think in terms of working towards self-forgiveness, it looks at, again, what's the impact of this on your life, and that does this event define who you are, examining how it happened, why you did it, learning from it, and ensuring that this becomes part of your experiences and part of your learning, but that it doesn't necessarily define who you are.
Does restitution come into play here at all, Michelle?
I think it does. I think it does. But I think more so just ensuring that you're looking in the greater context is important for to let go.
All right, Jessica, we appreciate you reaching out to Radio Times. I'd like to just touch briefly on restorative justice programs, which are starting to appear around the country. The goal is for offenders to try to come to terms with what they've done and for victims and their families to ask why. And basically, eventually, after a long process, I think it can take even up to a year, victim and offender meet and they talk face to face. Lisa Christian, what is the value of these restorative justice efforts, do you think?
I think the value for the people who have been wronged is to have an opportunity to face the person or the people who've created such an imbalance in their lives and who've created such a mess of their lives. And to do it in a way that's controlled, to do it in a way that is hopefully going to allow them to be able to articulate what their experience has been in a way that's going to be supportive and healthy and I want to even say in a way that's going to nurture them to be able to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Carlstrom, I've read that this can actually help to ease post-traumatic stress in victims.
It does, and I think working toward working with restitution does help. But again, I think they're separate tracks. I think there's a lot of value in hearing the words "I'm sorry" or seeing an outcome either in the courts or through the justice system. I think that it can help begin to let go, but I think we have to be careful to keep them separate in terms of one's own emotional and personal recovery.
Mm. Let's talk about forgiveness across the board. Should we expect to hear an apology from the people, the person we forgive? Lisa?
I don't
know. It would
know
be nice.
Yes, it would.
Is it necessary?
It would be nice, but it is not. It would be helpful, but it's not necessary. And keep in mind, too, that everyone who apologizes may not be sincere in what they're apologizing for or even know that they've even wronged the person. So I think that it would be nice, but it is not necessary in all cases.
All right. More telephone calls on the way. Beth in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hello and welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks. My question for your guest speaks almost directly to what you were just talking about. I don't have the opportunity to do any kind of restitution or anything with my offender. I was a victim of childhood emotional and physical abuse, and I'm no longer in a relationship with my offender. Forgiveness has been really difficult for me, and in therapy, I've been working on the concept of seeing my offender as a separate person and offering them mercy for the pain that they went through that caused them to do the offending as a means of achieving my own ability to forgive. And I was just wondering what your guests would think about that.
I have just a quick question for you, Beth, before we go to the guests, and feel free, you know, you don't have to answer this if it's too personal, but why do you feel you want to forgive?
because I want to achieve a level of peace about what happened to me. I want to be able to move on.
Okay. Michelle, mercy, where does mercy figure into forgiveness? Is it something that it walks hand in hand? Is it necessary most or all of the time?
I don't know that it's always necessary, but it sure is helpful. So I think, Beth, that's a powerful experience you're going through, and I hope that you're thinking about it as you're going through it for your own benefit and to see the offender as a very different person where that person lives in his or her own environment and made decisions that they're ultimately accountable for and that you didn't have a part in that. But I think generating mercy helps you to put it in a context that you can then see yourself as separate. And I do think that is a good strategy for you to work toward being able to forgive deeply, if that's something that you're able to do, and it sounds like that's what you're working toward.
Lisa, what do you think?
I think that how you decide to move forward in your healing process, just keep in mind that the abuse was not your fault, that the fault lies with the person who wronged you. You are not required to forgive them. If you can slowly begin to give yourself permission to allow them entry into your healing process, I think you should take it day by day. It is very slow, and it can be a very painful process as well.
When you say entry, what do you mean, Lisa?
That you have opened yourself up to allow you've opened yourself up to allow a person or people to come into that space of healing, to be able to begin to process all of that painful stuff. You are in essence allowing them entry into your healing process. And what is that going to look like moving forward? How can you navigate that moving forward?
All right. Thank you so much. And Beth, we really appreciate you sharing your story with us here at Radio Times. All right. Let's get to an email from Paul who says, I wonder what the term forgive means to your guest today. He has a couple of points. Does I forgive you mean I don't hate you? Does it mean I don't hold you responsible? Does it mean you are not responsible? Michelle, you want to tackle one or all of those?
Sure. I unpack forgiveness from responsibility, and I look at the way we approach forgiveness in grief recovery is the emotional burden and the emotional impact that we carry because of it. And so, especially in grief recovery, when you're thinking about the majority, while grief is connected to loss, but most grievers are grieving death. So the notion of responsibility and the other person's grudges or the other person's responsibilities, that you can't interact with that, as Lisa was saying at the top of this segment. So for me, the definition of letting go or of forgiveness is to let go of the negative impact that you have had on me.
Right. I totally agree. And just acknowledging that you cannot go back and change or undo the past, but you can move forward. And I think that's very much what forgiveness is.
More telephone calls here on Radio Times. Sean in Germantown, welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How do you deal with a parent, my mother, who has caused you so much wrong throughout your life, but I feel like my hating her is hating a part of myself, and I want to get beyond that point and have a good relationship with her, but she always revert back to this negative reaction.
Mm. So you want to forgive somebody who is continuing the wrong, and how do you navigate that, Lisa Christian?
I think it starts with healthy boundaries, because I am very empathetic to your situation, but you cannot change your mother's behavior. You cannot fix your mother. And, you know, there is something in recovery community called the three C's. You did not cause this situation with your mother. You can't cure it, and you certainly can't control it. But you can control how you deal with it and how you move forward with it. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to maybe find someone that you trust that you can talk with, that can help you set boundaries with your mother, because you can't change her behavior, but you can change how you deal with her.
So forgiving somebody, loving somebody, doesn't necessarily mean embracing that person.
Exactly. Or the ongoing behavior.
Yeah. Best of luck to you, Sean. Thank you so much for the call to Radio Times. So as we head to the top of the show, I just want to bring in briefly, it was recently the 10-year anniversary of the Amish schoolhouse shooting in Lancaster. You know, five children died in that shooting. And the Amish, in dealing with their grief, I'd like to get your opinion on some of the things that they're doing. They hold an annual event called the Sudden Death Reunion, which is not just focused on this incident, but also it's held for people who have lost loved ones, in particular children. They gather, they share experiences, they sing hymns. What is the value of a gathering like this? They unpack this stuff all over that again, it seems, and they experience it. But do you do that? Is it healthy to do that? Or do you really want to just kind of park it someplace after you've attempted to move on?
No, I think there's definite benefit in rituals. The ritual is not to re-traumatize the families. The ritual is to be able to acknowledge that, hey, something really terrible has happened and we have lost our children. And it's a way for the community to gather, to acknowledge, to grieve, and to offer support that's so vital and so necessary for anyone who's a co-victim of homicide. So I think it's a wonderful thing.
And Michelle Carlstrom, I've read too that some of the families even dedicate what are called memory corners in their homes, you know, favorite dolls, a report card, maybe even rose petals from the child's funeral. Morbid or a good way to come to grips with reality and acknowledge the person's existence.
Oh, a good way to come to grips with it. I think both the example of a memory corner as well as the annual event are wonderful, healthy examples of putting meaning in the suffering. And so that was kind of one of the last steps toward practicing forgiveness. But you can put meaning in the suffering, remember, honor, have that time out or that quiet place or that annual event where you reflect back, and then you look at where you are today. I think it's a very healthy thing. I think it's interesting that you bring up the Amish, because we haven't talked much about how religion connects or doesn't connect to forgiveness. But we do know from research that people who were raised from an early age to practice forgiveness, it is easier for them because they're more practiced at it. They're taught to do it. And while their religion might make them feel compelled to always forgive, and we don't want to apply that principle broadly, it is important that whether you're Amish or Baptist or Catholic or whatever your religious beliefs are, if you were raised in a culture of forgiveness, you have likely a compelling feeling to forgive, and those people do find it easier to forgive more quickly.
Michelle Carlstrom, our thanks to you for joining us here on Radio Times this hour as we focus on forgiveness. We appreciate it. Michelle Carlstrom is a licensed mental health professional and a certified grief recovery specialist. And Lisa Christian, good to have you here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa is Director of Community Services at the Anti-Violence Partnership of Philadelphia. And as always, we invite you to visit our Facebook page and take a listen to our podcasts. Simply head to whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. As always, great to have you along for Radio Times.